It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, nestled between the high school and the library, where it is currently 60 degrees. 61 degrees out at the airport, where they have northwest winds steady at 14, gusting to 22. Coming up on the Midday Report, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Kirsten Dobroth interviews Heidi Barrett McNerney, a licensed clinical social worker, about that, what that means to Kodiak. Also, last winter's heavy snowpack is finally melting away up north, and it's leaving a lot of carcasses behind. And Haines welcomed its first large cruise ship since 2019, but they're a little worried about a lack of information about COVID cases on board. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Dow Jones Industrial Average sinks more than 1,100 points, marking its biggest loss since 2020. NPR's David Gurr reports disappointing earnings. Reports from retailers reinforce investors' fears about the U.S. economy.
Shares of Target sank after it reported results for the first quarter that were not in line with what Wall Street expected. Like Walmart, which reported earnings on Tuesday, Target faced problems with inventory and consumer demand, and it had trouble navigating supply chain issues. For much of the day, its shares traded down around 25%. Wall Street was already worried about high inflation, and these earnings reports from retailers fueled that fear and concern the Federal Reserve will not be able to rein in prices that have been rising at their fastest pace in decades without starting a recession. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
The governor of New York is seeking tougher gun control actions through executive orders and bills. In the aftermath of last Saturday's mass shooting in Buffalo, investigators, meanwhile, are still gathering information about the young man they say was a self-described white supremacist who targeted black people when he opened fire at a top supermarket, killing 10 and wounding 3 others. NPR's Cheryl Corley has more.
For now, he faces a single count of first-degree murder. More charges from the county district attorney are expected. And investigators are going over a lengthy document that he posted online, and there is a federal investigation underway, so he may face federal hate crime charges.
NPR Cheryl Corley reporting. One of the former Minneapolis police officers involved in George Floyd's killing 2 years ago next week is pleading guilty to a state charge of aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. Thomas Lane and two others have already been convicted on federal charges that they willfully violated Floyd's rights and failing to help the African-American man as he struggled to breathe while then-officer Derek Chauvin had him pinned face down on the ground. Chauvin spending the next 2 decades in state prison for murder. Under his plea deal, Lane may serve a small fraction of that time concurrently with a yet-to-be-determined federal sentence. Most of the artillery sent by the U.S. to Ukraine is already being used in combat, according to the Pentagon. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports Russian progress continues to be slow.
A senior defense official says Ukrainian troops have forced the Russian army to fight over villages and even crossroads in eastern Ukraine, in some places driving them back to within a few miles of the Russian border. The official said 79 heavy cannons sent by the U.S. have aided that fight, and that so far Russia has failed to significantly interrupt the supply of arms and material from the West. The Pentagon official also said that if and when Sweden and Finland join NATO, the U.S. will take advantage of many decades of previous military cooperation with those two countries as they integrate with the NATO alliance. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haines. May is Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States, and this May also marks just over 2 years since the pandemic upended life for people around the country. And local therapists say people are still struggling. Heidi Barrett McNerney is a licensed clinical social worker and a behavioral health therapist at the Kodiak Community Health Center. She spoke to KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth about what mental health awareness means for the Kodiak Island community.
The topic of mental health got a lot of attention the first year of the pandemic, especially in the immediate aftermath of the shutdowns. We're right. More than 2 years out. Is COVID still having an effect on people?
Yes, it's definitely having an effect on people. And part of what is happening is we're coming out of the pandemic into the endemic stage. And I think for a lot of people, this is causing some confusion and also some anxiety and depression. These were things that were happening throughout the pandemic, but now that that's kind of in our past, I think people are trying to figure out, how do I move forward and what do I do to move forward? And it looks different for every person. You know, there still are some people who are very concerned about getting COVID, and then there's other people who feel like they're vaccinated, or maybe they're not, but they're feeling like we're kind of past the critical stage. So everybody has to kind of figure out for themselves where they're at and what they need to do to take the best care of themselves.
On that same topic, are mental health professionals trying to grasp what types of long-term ripples the pandemic has had on all of us collectively?
Yes, I think we are, but I think we're at the very beginning stages of that. I was just reading something the other day about depression and anxiety, and it more than doubled during the pandemic. And I don't think that that's going to change much as we kind of come out of that and into whatever this new era looks like.
I want to talk for a moment about kids. There's been a lot of attention on alarming rates of kids in crisis over the last year or so, really nationwide.
Yes.
What are you seeing here on the ground in Kodiak?
We're seeing on the ground in Kodiak what is happening nationwide. So throughout the pandemic, there was a 25% increase in depression among children and adolescents and a 20% increase in anxiety among children and adolescents. And, you know, as we get kind of back into a more normal routine as far as like kids being back in school full time, et cetera, I think we really have to look at ways to support not only the kids, but also support teachers and parents and make sure that there's better access to things like childcare, maybe flexible work schedules, those types of things so that parents and teachers can provide more direct care to kids. Kids need to have someone that they feel is totally supportive of them.
I think we need to acknowledge that this has been a really difficult week for the Kodiak community. Many of us or our neighbors or friends have searched for the little boy that went missing in Minoshka. For anyone who's struggling or knows someone who's struggling, both long-term and in this last week, are there any takeaways or suggestions you'd like to leave people with?
Yes. So first of all, of course, as a therapist, I always tell people, you know, don't wait too long to reach out. So if people are really struggling, reach out, maybe not to a therapist per se, but to friends and or family. It helps to talk about things, and it helps to know that we're connected and that we're supported. And then if you find that that's not enough, reach out to get some services, to see a therapist and or to see a medical provider. And I think when we look back to the beginning of the pandemic here in Kodiak, we can definitely see examples of how people reached out to help each other and that real community support that we also saw over this last week are two really great things that people can feel good about and look to as far as moving forward into the future.
That was licensed clinical social worker and behavioral health therapist Heidi Barrett McNerney speaking with KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth about Mental Health Awareness Month. Now that last winter's heavy snowpack is finally melting away, wildlife biologists in the eastern interior are getting a better idea of how many moose and bison starved to death because of a lack of forage. Meanwhile, several area residents are trying to get rid of the carcasses of winter kills that until now have been covered up by snow. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Katie Behrens says a few weeks ago she noticed the cow moose that had been hanging around her house near Delta Junction since early last winter was getting weaker as it scrounged around her yard every day for something to eat because its usual forage was buried under several feet of snow and ice.
She was trying to eat shrubs and stuff that she could reach. It was very thin. She couldn't walk. She was so weak the last week before she died. She couldn't get up.
Behrens says a couple of weeks ago she covered the carcass with a tarp and a couple of feet of snow. But last week she got the first whiff of the decaying animal, so she got a friend with a piece of heavy equipment called a front end loader to scoop up the carcass and bury it out in the woods.
Luckily, he moved it before it started to smell too bad. It was just starting to get ripe.
Delta Area State Fish and Game wildlife biologist Clint Cooper says it's a problem that several locals have had to deal with this spring.
Around town here, we had a lot of cases of dead moose earlier in the wintertime, and some of those moose now are showing up as the snow melts.
Cooper says he and other biologists are trying to figure out how much of the area's moose population died over the winter. He says it appears that more cows and calves than usual didn't make it, so the agency canceled a recent antlerless moose hunt in Game Management Unit 20D. But he doesn't think the winter kills will affect this fall's hunting season.
Definitely, we had some higher than normal mortality from what we've seen so far, but it doesn't appear to be that bad.
Cooper says the local bison population, on the other hand, definitely took a big hit.
We have documented 60 bison mortalities over the winter that we're aware of, and that's certainly way, way, way above average.
That's about a fifth of the 300-head Delta bison herd. Cooper says most of those that died were calves, along with a few yearlings. And he says more than a dozen were killed when they were hit by vehicles because the animals were using roads in lieu of their usual trails, which were covered by deep snow and ice. But he says the herd is overall in good shape, so the fall bison hunt is still a go.
We had a healthy population of bison, still have a healthy population of bison.
Cooper says now that the snow is melting, the bison are ranging back to their summer calving areas to the south, off to the west of Black Rapids.
They're definitely on the move. I did a flight last week, and about half the bison observed were present on their calving ground, which is down along the Delta River.
Cooper said Wednesday he's still getting reports of dead bison and moose around the Delta area. He says there's not much he can do but advise residents to remove the carcasses and bury them somewhere far from human-inhabited areas, including trails, because he says all that protein is going to attract bears and other scavengers. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Haines welcomed its first large cruise ship since September 2019 last week. It marks the start of what could be a record-breaking cruise season for Upper Lynn Canal communities. But with little public data about COVID-19 cases on ships, some community members worry they could also bring a surge in coronavirus cases. KHNS's Corinne Smith reports.
A crowd gathered at the Haines cruise ship dock to welcome the first big ship since 2019, including the Haines High School Band, the Chilcat Dancers, borough officials, tour operators, and residents out to see the celebration. Deputy Mayor Cheryl Stickler welcomed the passengers of the Royal Caribbean ship, the Serenade of the Seas.
You are the first large cruise ship we've been able to host since September 18th, 2019. That's only 967 days, or 2 years, 7 months, and 24 days. Welcome. Welcome, Serenade of the Seas.
The 960-foot ship, with room for 2,500 passengers, is also the first Royal Caribbean vessel to tie up in Haines since the early 2000s. The Serenade's captain, Chell Nordmo, thanked borough officials as they exchanged gifts, a model of the ship and a plaque commemorating the Serenade's first-ever visit to Haines.
Thank you for your warm welcome and hospitality during this inaugural call to Haines, and we are very excited for the opportunity to showcase this beautiful part of the world, not only to our guests, but also to our crew members who proudly represent 54 nationalities from around the globe.
The Chilkat dancers, made up of a multi-generational group from kids to grandparents, wear traditional regalia and perform several songs and dances. Haines resident Janine Ward is a dock representative with Alaska Mountain Guides, overseeing lines of tourists boarding buses for evening excursions.
I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to this summer, and hopefully it brings a lot of revenue for the town of Haines.
Haines bookstore owner Amy Kane says after more than 2 years of pandemic and small or no cruise ships, it's a much-needed boost to small businesses like hers.
So it was challenging to build up for it and to find staff for it, but I'm glad I made it. I feel like I just made it to the starting line, really, after 2 years.
But Kane says she's concerned that cruise passengers could bring a surge in COVID-19 cases to small communities like Haines.
It's definitely nerve-wracking because, just travelers in general pose a higher risk. Having more people here, having, the town size population double in one day or whatever, depending on how full the ships are, is a lot. I do feel like we're going to see a spike in numbers.
A Royal Caribbean spokesperson said in an email that the cruise line requires passengers ages 12 and older to be vaccinated and show a negative PCR test before sailing. Children younger than 12 are required to test twice. And all crew are required to be vaccinated. But that doesn't mean the ships are COVID-free. On Monday, Serenade of the Seas passenger Jim Gettler of Washington State contacted KHNS after his son and daughter-in-law tested positive for COVID-19.
Saturday night, my partner and I, we just tested just in general. We carried some antigen tests with us. We were negative. My son and his wife felt sick yesterday shortly after getting off the boat. And they tested themselves, and they were both positive.
Royal Caribbean did not respond to inquiries about how many passengers tested positive on this Serenade sailing. Cruise lines are required to report COVID data to state authorities, but little data is publicly available. Gettler says his son reported his positive results to the cruise line, and Royal Caribbean is offering to reimburse COVID-positive passengers for meals after their cruise up to $100 per day, not exceeding 10 days. Royal Caribbean did not respond to requests for comment. Haines Tourism Director Stephen Ock says the cruise lines have agreements with port communities that include COVID protocols, sanitation requirements, and a commitment that if there is an outbreak, passengers would be medevaced to Seattle. Ock says Haines does not have COVID requirements, but local businesses and residents can take precautionary measures.
If you look at the operators, a lot of them are requiring masking on the buses for transportation. So, every business has its own opportunity to take whatever steps it feels is necessary.
Ock echoed state public health officials who recommend COVID vaccinations, masking indoors, and social distancing where possible. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered.
From The Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
In 1837, Louis Daguerre discovered how to create a lasting, detailed photographic image. Within months of the groundbreaking publication of his photographic process in 1839, people started taking cameras to every single corner of the world to photograph the wonders they saw there. But if you look at these early photographs, you'll notice that no matter what the scene, there's always one thing missing from the picture: people. Well, it turns out that there were plenty of people in these scenes, they just can't be seen because they were moving. The early photosensitive chemicals took so long to form an image that pedestrians and street traffic passed in and out of the picture without registering. So photographers started looking for ways to take photographic portraits, but exposure times remained quite long, 20 minutes or more. And since there was no easy way to stare at a fixed point in space for such a long time, many photographers instructed their subjects to pose with their eyes closed. The first major improvement came from 1840 Hungarian mathematician Joseph Max Petzval. He invented a lens that let 22 times more light into the camera, reducing exposure times to 2.5 minutes. And that same year, English scientist John Frederick Goddard discovered that exposing plates to bromine vapors increased their photosensitivity, further shortening exposures to under a minute. But the true father of modern photography was English physicist William Henry Fox Talbot. In a sense, what Talbot did was invent the negative that could be used to make any number of positive prints. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Wednesday. It is the 18th day of May, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:40. It will set again at 10:33 this evening. That will give us 16 hours and 53 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 77 degrees, set in 2014, and our record low was 28, set in 1966. Currently, 61 degrees out at the airport, fair skies, a little breezy, northwest 14 right now, gusting to 22 miles per hour, with unlimited 10 miles an hour, 10 miles of visibility. Sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 62 predicted, northwest winds to 15, mostly clear tonight, a low around 42. Northwest 5. Sunny skies for Thursday and Friday as well, with highs near 58 tomorrow, high near 52 on Friday, and on Friday night, rain is likely, mainly after 2 a.m., could be heavy at times Friday night. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 5:05 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 7.2-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:12 this evening, of 2.3 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:21 this afternoon, be 12.9 feet in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 10:56 p.m. of 3.3 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West 20 today, seas to 4 feet. West 15 tonight, seas coming up to 5 feet. And variable 10 tomorrow, seas to 3 feet. On Friday, they are calling for east winds to 35 knots and seas to 16 feet. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, southwest 15 today, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, southwest 15, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 2 feet. And on Friday, in the Chillicothe, they are talking about northeast winds to 40 knots and seas to 10 feet. The City of Kodiak Public Works Department is temporarily closing Bartell Avenue from Mill Bay Road to Chichinoff Street today and tomorrow to install a water main. The road will reopen at the end of the day tomorrow. During the closure, traffic controllers will be in attendance to provide local access only to worldwide movers. They appreciate your patience. If you have any questions, contact Steve Wilson, Maintenance Supervisor, at 907 486-8060. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting is open to the public. Public members are also encouraged to tune into the web stream. That web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any other questions, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636. You are invited to a Kodiak Pride rock painting party that's happening next Saturday at the Nimitz Gazebo between 12 and 2 p.m. Please join the Kodiak Pride Committee for a fun afternoon of painting rocks. They'll be used in collaboration with upcoming Kodiak Pride events. It's all sponsored by the Kodiak Coast Guard Enlisted Association's National Office. Rocks and painting supplies will be provided, but feel free to bring your own. Again, that's next Saturday, Nimitz Gazebo, 12 to 2 p.m., and that's on Old Tom Stiles Road on the way to the airport. Kodiak Blood Drive is happening. That's going on between Thursday, May 26th, and Monday, May 30th. It's happening at the Alaska Army National Guard Armory at 125 Powell Avenue, and that's happening all days between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., again, Thursday, May 26th through Memorial Day. To schedule your appointment with Tara Cupp, call her at 907-654-9419. And coming up on Memorial Day, the 34th Annual Sourdough Pancake Breakfast that benefits Kodiak 4-H, and it will be held at the Elks Memorial Day, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Only $10 for people 11 and up, $5 for youths 4 to 10, and children 3 and under eat for free. All proceeds benefit local Kodiak 4-H youth, and you should go to the Kodiak 4-H Facebook page to find out more about that, or give them a call at 907-486-1503. Read Beyond the Beaten Path. Sign up for Kodiak Public Library's summer reading program. All ages are welcome to participate and earn prizes. Use Beanstack to log your reading, earn prizes, and get involved. Check it all out at kodiak.beanstack.org. For more information, give the library a call or drop by soon. That number for the library, 486-8686. Also, the library is hosting a community beekeeping project this summer. Check out their many books on everything bee-related, and you can also attend a live hive check every Tuesday. That happens at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or you can watch safely from inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. Also, don't forget, Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library hosts a Lego Club. It's a drop-in program for youth after school. Children under 10 should be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 11 a.m. is preschool story time for children 3 to 5 and their families. Story time is limited to 10 children, so please call the library at 486-8686 to reserve a spot. And also on Thursdays at 3 p.m., the library's next chess club will be meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages. Information about any of this stuff, call the library at 907-486-8686. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center will have a regular monthly meeting of their board of directors at 6 p.m. Tuesday, May 24th, next Tuesday. That'll happen at their offices at 422 Hillside Drive. Guests are welcome. Call them up at 907-486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org for more information on how to attend. Chiniac school students and their teachers and volunteers have gathered beach garbage and created marine debris flowers. These flotsam flowers are on display at Kodiak's new plant nursery, Rooted. That's where strawberry fields used to be. They're open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come by and enjoy and contemplate where it all comes from. To better serve our community by understanding its needs, the 2022 Kodiak Health and Well-Being Survey is now open to Kodiak residents age 18 and older. The survey results help healthcare and social service providers focus on what is most important to those of us who live and work on the island. It also helps attract grant funding to help improve health and social services. The survey is anonymous, takes about 10 minutes, and can be completed on a smartphone or tablet. At the end, participants can opt to enter a drawing for a cash prize of up to $500 by emailing their contact information. Look for a survey invite in this week's mail or access the survey on the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center website.